From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 12th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's reports with Ben Brown from University of Missouri Extension. We'll also take a look at what's been happening in the weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, will be here to talk about the Arkin PLC decision that needs to be made again for the 2022 growing season. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day at $5.99, down $2. The May down a penny and three quarters at $6.75. In December, new crop at $5.58 and a quarter, up three quarters. March beans up 12 and three quarters, $13.99 and a quarter. The settlement price. New crop November up a 12 and a half at $13.12 and a half cents. Bean meal futures up 3.10. The bean oil 50 cents higher. Soft red winter wheat down 12 and a half. The hard red down 13 and three quarters. And live cattle futures finished 67 and a half cents lower. Feeder down $1.32 and a half, and lean hogs up $1.20 on the afternoon. Ben Brown from Missouri University Extension, along with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there, is an agricultural economist and now joins us to discuss the trade in Chicago, but mostly the USDA reports that were released on this 12th day of January. This is a big day for reports each and every year because their wheat seedings report that was out, some cotton numbers were out, of course, the monthly WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, and the final crop production figures for the corn and soybean crops for the 2021 growing season were released by USDA today. What number did you find of most interest among them?
Yeah, out of all those, Todd, you also forgot the December 1 grain stocks numbers, I think, out of your list there. I was trying to keep track, but yeah, big report day. This is always one of the top three report days of the year, if not the biggest. A couple of things, you know, I was interested in first and foremost, probably the big stories were South American corn and soybean production for Argentina and Brazil. And those certainly saw some downward revision that was expected. Probably the magnitude of the revision, especially for Brazilian soybean production and then also Argentina production, were probably the big ones there. So just to kind of summarize those a little bit. Argentina soybean production fell 3 million metric tons all the way down to 46.5 million metric tons. Brazilian soybean production fell 5 million metric tons down to 139. Both in the same direction as the trade was expecting, but a little bit stronger. It was kind of interesting to note that in both corn and soybeans, because we also saw USDA make a revision to Brazilian corn down 3 million metric tons to 115 million metric tons there. So for all of those, for corn and soybean production in South America, or corn and soybean numbers in South America, the production was revised down pretty significantly, but the export numbers were held the same. So softer Brazilian corn production, but exports remained at 43 million metric tons. On the soybean side, Brazilian soybean production, again, was reduced to that 139 million metric tons, but exports were left alone at 94 million metric tons. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a curious move there, the fact that exports by both those crops in Brazil were left alone. All the adjustments came out of the ending stocks number, and as a result, we saw global ending stocks of corn and soybeans come down probably more than expected. So that was probably the biggest one. After that, you know, looking at just kind of those final 2021 numbers, again, USDA will get a chance to revise these again in September when we get the year-end grain stocks on September 1. But corn and soybean yields largely came in very similar to the November estimates. Corn yield for the U.S. was 177 bushels to the acre. That was right at where USDA was in November. Soybeans were up just 0.2 of a bushel to 51.4 bushels to the acre. When we look at the ending stock number, which is where I went next, because that kind of signaled some of the demand pressure or demand changes we had, we saw USDA increase corn ending stocks 47 million bushels, and then we had an increase in soybean ending stocks by 10 million bushels. What that amounted to, while that 47 million bushel increase on corn ending stocks is higher. Most of that was represented by an increase in production because USDA made largely offsetting changes in the corn demand picture, increasing ethanol production or corn used for ethanol 75 million bushels. Also, the other industrial uses of corn, another 5 million bushels there, and then decreasing export and exports 75 million bushels for corn as well. And then very few changes on the soybean demand side, largely washing or largely leaving all those the same, and the increase coming from that increased production, 2/10 of a bushel increase in production. On the wheat side, which is again the next number I was really interested in, we certainly saw some additional wheat acres come into the picture, maybe not as much as what I thought, but certainly weighing on the market today as we look at some of these increases in wheat acres, up to 34.4 million acres of total winter wheat. The big winner or the big gainer was the soft red winter wheat category for the year. And then grain stocks, which have a tendency to provide big surprises, were pretty much a snoozer on the day, largely in check. If there was one that was of interest, it was probably the wheat one. Again, I think we continue to feed a little bit more wheat, even as wheat prices have reached, you know, $8 than some people would have expected. And so a little bit stronger wheat use, a little bit softer corn use, but again, nothing major on that side of the coin. So, a pretty balanced day overall.
Let's return to the USDA export numbers from Brazil. You mentioned those, saying that they were still very strong. I'm wondering if the agency learned anything about the commitment that nation has to exports from last year's short crop and export season.
So I think a little bit of both. Certainly, we saw USDA maintain or increase exports for South America, even in the face of declining production down there. Or let me put it this way, the exports held much better than what the production numbers did last year. And so USDA could be fading that a little bit today with the expectation that, yes, South America is committed to those export markets. It also could be fading, just the total numbers and trying to make them balance by just taking out of ending stocks for the current time. From just a technical point of view, South American soybeans remain about 70 cents below U.S. soybeans at the moment. And so the impression here is that if soybeans are going to be exported specifically into the Chinese market, it's going to come from the South American soybeans. And so USDA didn't adjust imports of soybeans by China, and therefore they largely kept the expectation that the majority of those soybeans China is going to import are going to come from South America. I maybe was a little bit surprised that we didn't see USDA lower Chinese soybean imports. It matches the export numbers that we're seeing, or at least holding those export numbers out of South America. But we've seen hog crush margins or crush margins to feed hogs within China be extremely weak here the last couple of months. And as a result, Chinese buyers are willing to wait a little bit longer to buy soybeans, especially from the southern market, just because they don't have the demand for the domestic soybeans as strong of demand at the moment. So I think what we saw was USDA saying, let's wait a month. And again, I think it's the same for the U.S. export number. USDA left U.S. soybean exports alone, even though we've seen shipments taper off pretty dramatically here the last couple of weeks. We had a disappointing 33.25 million bushels exported last week, which was down from the 59 million bushels the prior week and a four-week average of 64 million bushels. Again, it's tapering off very fast. And even though we have a surplus of about 73 million bushels, based on the season average pace to hit USDA's target, you know, that's falling very quickly after being a surplus of 98 million bushels the week before. So I think USDA wanted another month to feel good or to feel justified in making a revision to U.S. soybean exports. And the result of that, I think they left all the world numbers the same as well.
Okay, thank you. Good information. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He is an agricultural economist with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute and University of Missouri Extension. Gary Schnittke now joins us. Hi, Gary. Thanks for being with us. You've written an article for the FarmDoc Daily website. I'd rather forgotten about this, but the ARC PLC decision needs to be made every year now. Just go back and tell me when that change happened. I know producers are used to it, relatively speaking, but it does kind of sneak up on them, along with the crop insurance decisions they'll have to make.
Yeah, so that was the 2018 Farm Bill that changed it. And it now, the 2018 Farm Bill, after the 2019 and 2020 years, now allow farmers to change their choice by March 15th. So if they want to change their commodity title choice for corn from PLC to ARC County, they can do so by March 15th. If if there's no communication or no changes made to the commodity title programs, ARC, PLC, and ARC IC, if so desiring, by March 15th, it reverts to what was there last year.
I think most producers will probably not recall that they would need to change this simply because they had chosen, I'm going to guess, PLC to begin with for corn, based on some of the information that you had put out from the university, and didn't have to do any changes last year. So now they have to think about it because prices are higher this year, and I'm wondering whether that makes a difference.
So if we look at it, probably the most prevalent choices were PLC for corn, ARC County for soybeans, and PLC for wheat. If we're looking at 2022 and we're looking at very high prices, the chances of any of these commodity title programs making payments is pretty small. So PLC for corn, you have to have prices below market year average, prices below 370. And we would estimate that that's about a 10% chance of happening for next year. So there is a chance that we could be below 370. That would be very bad, by the way, just so we all know. You could switch your corn to ARC County. However, if you do that, the program, you would no longer be eligible for SCO, the crop insurance program. So if you're buying SCO, you should probably leave corn at PLC, or you will have to leave corn at PLC. And it's sort of a push whether you take PLC or ARC County. Are you more concerned about yield, in which case you would choose ARC County? Are you more concerned about price? Choose PLC, and it's just sort of a toss-up.
And the SCO decision was mostly probably a money-saving device for crop insurance.
Yeah, so what a lot of people would do is they would take an 85% or 80% RP policy and then get a county-level policy above it up to 86%. Again, if you want that protection, you will need to be in PLC. So, by the way, the other county product, ECO, which goes from 86% to either 90 or 95%, you can be in either program. So it's just the SCO, that 86% down to the RP or the combo product coverage level that you need to be in PLC.
So 10% chance of being below 370 on corn, ARC County may be a choice that you're wanting to make. Soybeans, most producers are already thinking ARC County.
Yeah, and again, PLC, you have to have a market year average price below the effective reference price, which would be 840. We've never seen a market year average price below that. And fall bids are above $12 right now, so that would be quite a fall. And we would estimate the chance of being below 840 to be about 4%.
Do you have advice for those that have wheat acres and whether they should take ARC or PLC?
Yeah, so by the way, these are for base acres, so it doesn't matter what you plant, it's what your base acres on your farm are. I would probably still tend to stick with PLC for wheat. Again, you're probably not going to get a payment on any of those in 2020 for the 2022 crop. So splitting a lot of hairs over decision that likely will have no impact.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Todd.
You may read more about the Arkin PLC decision for corn, soybeans, and wheat in the state of Illinois and across the nation for that matter on the farmdocdaily.illinois.edu website. We were speaking with University of Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnittke about the article. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, another beautiful day. Well, we have a little bit of cloud cover around here, but yeah, I hope everything's going well on your side of the fence as well.
Indeed it is. Can you start in South America, Argentina in particular, for me today, please?
Well, Argentina is in the midst of a very serious heat wave and dry situation, and it's going to continue into Saturday. There will not be much in the way of, well, any precipitation of significance over these next few days, and we will be seeing the temperatures peaking out daily in the 100 to 110 degree range, and there will be some extremes of 110 to 115. Those will occur Friday and Saturday for the most part. Yesterday, it was in that range of 100, 110. Most everybody was 100 to 105. The exception was in southern Buenos Aires, where there was some upper 80s and lower to middle 90 degree temperatures noted. It's pretty serious because the moisture profile is pathetic. They have virtually no topsoil moisture, and the subsoil is rated short to very short. There's only a small pool of subsoil moisture that's marginally adequate, and that is in a very important crop area from southern Cordoba into central parts of Buenos Aires, and the crops there will have the best potential to get out of this mess when it does rain. And we do expect to see rain starting to evolve on Saturday night and will become most significant as we go from Sunday into probably Wednesday of next week. And at the moment, it looks like a fairly hefty amount of rain will fall in central and northeastern parts of the country. Now, it's a little questionable as to how much of an area that's going to see the heavy rains. But some of these model runs recently have been suggesting 2 to 4 and 6 inch amounts. And the European model wants to favor the northeast part of the country outside of the major grain and oilseed production areas, whereas the GFS has it a little bit more into some of that production area, still not favoring the southwest quite as much as the central areas. But the bottom line is that we do expect rain to occur from Saturday night into Wednesday of next week. It will be beneficial, probably stop this decline in crop conditions that's underway. Some of the early season corn and sunseed are already reproducing and have been. So those crops are going to yield poorly because of this recent heat wave. And there's some crop that really wasn't even completely planted yet. Some of the late corn, I think about 14 to 16% of the late corn had not been planted as of last Thursday, and I can assure you there was no planting in the last week, as dry as it has become. So there's some planting that will likely occur immediately following the rain and some replanting possibly. So it's not a complete disaster there, but there's going to be a lot of variation from one field and one region to another across Argentina, and it is worth watching. We do think that we'll see a little bit more of a normalish weather pattern occurring in the second week of the forecast. And if that happens after a good soaking in the first week, we probably will come out at least on the right track towards improvement.
And then in southern Brazil, does this have any impact there?
The driest areas in southern Brazil have been recently Rio Grande do Sul and up into Paraguay. And then, of course, there was a time in December and very early in January when Paraná and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul were also suffering from some significant dryness. But they did get a little rain in the final part of December and the first week of January, and there was a little relief in some of that area. Not so much in Rio Grande do Sul, but more in Paraná and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul. And it looks like the forecast for this first 7 days of the outlook is not going to bring meaningful rainfall into that particular region. and they will encounter a new period of drying. Now, southern Rio Grande do Sul is likely to get caught up in some of the rain. That's a rice area, and they do have some corn there and a minor amount of soybeans, but it does not look like there will be much in the way of significant moisture in the northern parts of Rio Grande do Sul, where the soybean population is so much higher. Paraguay has had the absolute most horrific weather this growing season, and their yields are off by a lot. Paraná, though, did see improvement. Like I said, it looks like, though, western Paraná and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul are likely to suffer from a restricted amount of rain over the next not only week, but probably 10 days or so. And the need for rain will be on the rise in those areas again as moisture stress becomes more and more significant throughout this forecast period.
And before I let you go, have you thought very much about what the growing season in the United States might look like?
You know, the evidence for trouble in the U.S. continues to build, and I think we need to be cautious and somewhat concerned. I'd say the cautious for obvious reason. It's still mid-January, and we've got a long ways to go before spring comes around. We've got some notable dryness in the plains, and it is creeping into the western Corn Belt. Iowa and Missouri in particular have seen well below average precipitation the last 60 days, along with all of hard red winter wheat country. And so we're watching that because we do have La Nina with us, and the latest forecasts suggest La Nina will stay with us into a large part of the spring season. If that verifies, La Nina doesn't usually go real well with precipitation in the spring, and we usually keep below normal precipitation in the central part of the country, including both the hard red winter wheat areas and these areas in the western Corn Belt like Iowa and Missouri. So that raises some question. We also have the negative phase of Pacific decadal oscillation that's prevailing. That's a phenomenon that tends to like to put ridginess into the middle of the country. Especially when the ocean water off the west coast of the United States is notably cool. And it looks like that's going to be the case this spring. And that could allow for a ridge to build over these drier areas earlier than normal and could become a strong ridge later in the year. Now, this is just really speculative. So I urge a lot of caution. But given where we are in the 22-year solar cycle and looking at these anomalous patterns of La Nina and PDO raises some big caution flags in my mind. And I do think that we're going to have a little more of a challenge in the coming growing season in these areas.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather. You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.